But I thank you all for being here tonight. I am also very grateful for Radio Free Palmer. They will be streaming us live throughout the valley and especially in the Palmer area. In addition, they have a website where you can go and pick up the podcast. They have these little placards back there, and on them they tell you that this is KVRF 89.5 FM. Their website is radiofreepalmer.org. You can either pick up the podcast there, or you can go to the App Store and get the Radio Free Palmer app for your smartphone or iPad. I'd like to introduce our very esteemed member of the group, Mr. Pete Probasco, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Pete. Tonight we will have a question and answer period after the candidates have each had an opportunity to introduce themselves. We have my friends from Palmer Toastmasters here. They will be in charge of timing, and that would be my friend Vicki Cleaver. She'll be manning the flags, and Diana Straub is backing us up in case we need that help. Rachel Greenberg is not only our hostess here at the Matsu Senior Services Palmer Senior Center, but she is also a fellow Toastmaster and helping to organize this event. Finally, I cannot say last but least, because they are the heart of this event, I'd like to give my thanks to Mark and Heather from the Frontiersmen. Thank you so much for helping us sponsor this event and advertising it. It's all my fault, is what she said. Our timing will be in the form of their self-introductions will be 3 to 4 minutes. When they've reached the 3-minute mark, Vicki will hold up the green flag. When they have 3 minutes 30 seconds completed, she'll hold up the yellow flag telling them that they have 30 seconds remaining. And finally, when they've reached their 4-minute mark, she'll hold up the red flag. And in Toastmasters, we say, that's when you shut up and sit down. I was a lot more polite when I was speaking to the candidates. The other point is that the same 1 minute before your end, 30 seconds till the end, and at the end will be green, yellow, red as well. At this time, I'd like to begin with Mr. Bob Doyle, who is running for the district. I forgot to write down your district, Bob. Could you please tell us that?
Yeah, I'm Bob Doyle, and it's the Susitna district. It's basically Wasilla North, and I don't right now. I'm not aware of any opposition, so I'm running for re-election, and I'm looking forward to being re-elected. But I appreciate your vote. I've been a member of MEA for 32 years. Prior to that, 1968, we came up and been in Alaska ever since. Went to East High, actually played basketball right over here. We'd rent a train, bring the train up, stop at the depot, come over and play basketball right there against high school, Palmer High. So been around for a while. I'm really appreciative of the opportunities to be able to serve on the board. I'm really happy to be able to vote and support the including the generation station, and one of the things that I'd really want to do if I'm reelected is to make sure we bring that to completion. We'd like to be under budget and on schedule, and I'd also like to make sure we have a long-term natural gas supply, because we really don't want to operate those on diesel. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the contested seat candidates and let them spend more time.
So I guess we'll go ladies first. Jamie, would you like to give us your self-introduction, please?
Sure. Hello, my name's Jamie Duhamel. I think I know almost everybody in this room. There's a few people I don't know. I am a born and raised Alaskan. I was born on Elmendorf Air Force Base. I was raised out here in the Matsu. I was the first graduating class of Colony High School. I married my high school sweetheart. We're raising 4 sons. I tell you all this not because I think it makes me qualified for the MEA board, but because I want you to understand my dedication to this community. I have everything at stake when it comes to making decisions that benefit my neighbors and this community for the long term. I spent my entire life basically working in the social service field. I have always been motivated by a need to serve people and my community. Directly out of high school, I began my professional career as a therapeutic specialist with autistic children. I then spent many years helping folks with disabilities find jobs so they could lead healthy lives. I then spent many more years working with children who are sexual abuse victims, find recovery and safety. And then my last long-term social work job, I spent years advocating for foster care kids to find permanent homes and placements for them. I tell you all this again because I want you to understand that my motivation is about people. It's about you, it's about families, it's about businesses. The entire time that I was working in these fields, I was also volunteering. So I spent many years as the president of the board of directors for LINCS, Matsu Parent Resource Center, which is an organization that helps parents find resources they need for their children with disabilities. And while serving in that capacity, I helped grow the organization, I helped improve the services that we provided to families, and I left it on firmer financial ground than when I began. And I think that's important because I want you to understand that I know exactly what it takes to serve on a board of directors, to set a mission and a vision for the long-term benefit of the organization, the association, and the people who are served by that association. I think that I also understand very clearly the boundaries of a board of director member and how distinctly we need to separate ourselves from the day-to-day operations of any organization. So while there may be an understanding out there that you need to have a very direct understanding of utility operations of the business itself, I think it's even more important that you understand how to work within a team function on a board of directors. Having said that, I have spent the last 2 years of my life working on local energy development issues. There are some very critical decisions that this community is poised to make, and I have educated myself very clearly on local energy generation and the direction that we should be going in and the direction we should not be going in. So those are the types of information and expertise I want to take to the board. I also want to provide the perspective of being a working mom of four kids who understands very clearly the day-to-day struggle and challenge of making ends meet. We need somebody on that board who is living it in their life every day so that when we set decisions for the long term, we understand how those trickle down to families and businesses. So I want to thank you again for coming today, and I look forward to answering your questions, and I hope to spend some time with you after as well. Thank you.
Marvin Yoder, would you like to give us your welcoming speech?
Good evening. And I also welcome to those of you on the radio. I hope my microphone's working better than it was. I came to Alaska in 1969. I spent most of my time in Southeast Alaska and then got to the interior Alaska in 1996 and then moved down here in 2007. We bought a home in 2004, but I was working around, and so I was only home occasionally during those first couple of years. One of the things that I think is very critical is that MEA is getting ready to make a really big transition. For years, MEA has been a retailer. They bought wholesale power and they sold retail power. Now they're going to become a manufacturer. So they're going to buy natural gas and sell power. So there's a manufacturing step in between. They have not done that before. That's a new phase that they have to take on. During most of my career while here in Alaska, I spent at least 25 years working in municipal government. Again, many different issues, many projects that had to be done, many issues that we had to discuss with the board or with the council. And so that experience got me into a lot of utility stuff and a lot of construction issues, of many setting prices, trying to figure out exactly how we're going to make things meet on a small budget. And if you didn't know anything about Bush, Alaska, most of those budgets are very small and they're very tight. And so we found ourselves many times trying to figure out how to make something work to better the community. So when you have a community that has no running water, and you have people still using honey buckets, there has to be a way to figure out how to get those utilities to those people and do it at a price that they can afford. We also spent 10 years as the manager of the Galena Electric Utility. So we bought generators, we upgraded power lines, we did all the things we had to do to make sure that we could provide the best price possible power to our customers. So that's my background and experience. I also, along the way, served on a lot of different boards. I was actually part of the very first Coastal Management Council back in 1979. We were setting up the rules for the coastal management. We went around to the whole state and listened to testimony from all kinds of people all the way up to Barrow and up and down the state. I served with the Municipal Managers Association. I was president of that association for several years. We would have board meetings, and so we also had input into the Municipal League. I also served on the board of directors for the Alaska Power Association several years, and got acquainted with the statewide issues of power, and knew that the many issues that we were facing out there. So I have a lot of experience on boards. I have experience dealing with the utilities, dealing with issues that have to do with how do you provide a service at a low cost. And that's really my prime motivation, is that I think that to see the valley grow and to take care of families, we need to have low-cost electricity. The way to do that is to work with management and our management team and serve as a board member. I know that as a manager myself, many times somebody at the council table would come up with an idea. They would say, yeah, we'll take a look at that. And that's helpful. You don't run the organization, but you're there with your expertise and your background, and you try to help the ideas go forward. And that's my commitment to you, is that I want to work hard to make an efficient operation for businesses and people in this community.
Thank you. Bob, would you like to join the audience?
Sure.
I figured you might want to do that. Thank you for putting up with sitting up here through that. That was very informative. Thank you both. Now I'm going to head into the prepared question and answers. They've been compiled between Heather and myself and the candidates, and we are very interested in providing you this evening. Please let's hold our applause until we have completed the Q&A portion. It'll last about 30 minutes. Each candidate will have 2 to 3 minutes to respond to each question. Since you pretty much answered what our first question was, why are you running? We'll move to the second one. So, Jamie, since you did the opening, we're going to go to Marvin now. What do you believe are the two highest priorities for the MEA board over the next 12 months?
Obviously, building the plant. There's no question about it that getting that plant built on time and on budget is the actual number one priority for MEA. Following that is making sure we have a gas supply contract that is somewhat long term, although I know that we may have to start out with a temporary or a short term contract, but trying to get a gas contract that is within the limits that keep our rates low or even lower than they are now. And that's going to be a challenge because there are lots of ideas out there on where the gas is going to come from. You have the legislature working on a proposal. You have some other people working on a different proposal. You have people trying to find out how to get something out of the ground and reinvigorate the wells that are going dry. And so there's all kinds of proposals out there, and trying to maneuver amongst these different proposals is going to be really critical. And I think that is an area where management's going to come to the board and say, here's our proposals. You got options 1, 2, and 3. What do you think is the most feasible? What should we look at? What should we talk about? And so those are the two main issues, is how do we get that plant built on time and on budget so we're ready to take over on January 1st, 2015 without any hitches, and how do we get a gas contract that's going to keep us going? Always there's other issues that are constant. Weather is a big one up here, trying to keep the lines going and doing that summer clearing. Those are big issues. We have that in Galena a lot. We set crews out to try to get the lines cleared so we don't have trees in the power lines when the wind blows. And so there's maintenance issues, And those kinds of things are the constant, ongoing, day-to-day things that have to be done. But really trying to get that plant and the gas supply online and ready to go by 2015, that's the biggest challenge.
Jamie, the same question. Would you like me to repeat it?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Well, I think Mr. Yoder's response was quite eloquent and quite accurate. I believe the Aklutna gas-fired power plant is the most critical issue we have at hand. Fortunately, it's on time and on budget, and things are going smoothly. The gas contract is also clearly an issue, and I've heard from pretty reputable sources that we're pretty good in that area, that things are going to be okay, that there's a lot. We all know that there's a lot of gas. It's about getting it into the pipe, and it's about getting it here to the MATSU. But I have it on good authority that those issues are being taken care of as we speak, so I have full confidence that we are going in the right direction. Clearly secondary to the Aklutna gas plant is also the transmission lines that we need to build to get that electricity to the broader MATSU borough area. I understand that is still under, the plans for those transmission lines are still under consideration, are quite controversial right now. So I'd really like to be at the table to kind of help smooth the way there and get those lines going where they need to go without ruffling too many feathers. And but there's also an issue that I think that the board, I would like the board to set as a priority, which I think would help with some of the gas issues, and that's energy efficiencies in general. I think there's a lot of things that have been done in other states and other utilities for the community that have allowed local families and businesses to lower their electric rates and extend the fuel supplies that are available to the community. So if we can do both at the same time, if we can make our public buildings more efficient and perhaps even lower taxes, if we can extend our gas supplies so we don't have to worry so much about, you know, how many billions of cubic feet we're going to get per day, I think that that's a good thing. And affordable energy is good for families and it's good for our utility. Thank you.
You know, I should have said, Jamie, just stay standing. One method for reducing the amount of fuel MEA uses is, as you said, to improve the energy efficiency of buildings in the co-op service area. Would you support MATSU Borough Energy Efficient Building Regulation, as well as an investment of MEA co-op dollars toward grants for energy efficient building renovations to achieve that goal?
I absolutely would. I think that MEA could be very important leaders in energy efficiency in our community. I think that we need to be careful when we say the word regulation and that we're making sure we're not creating so much red tape and you know, and all of this kind of administration stuff that it makes it difficult for businesses and families to actually achieve energy efficiency. But I do think, and I'm not sure if your question was part about creating standards for new buildings, is that what you said? So we also want to make sure that new construction isn't completely hindered as well and drives up the prices of the homes and the apartment buildings that would be accessed by our local neighbors. But I do think that we have so much room. There's just so much that we haven't been doing as a utility that we could be doing that could improve these types of resources and access to lowered monthly bills and extended supplies. So yes, I would be in favor of that.
Mr. Yoder, Marvin?
There's always a caution when you start with regulations, and most of the time what you find is that when the prices are such that it's good for private business to do some kind of renovation, they'll do it. And I mean, I lived in Bush, Alaska, where the rates were up for 30 cents, and I guarantee you we were efficient. We watched everything very carefully. And so I'm not proposing that we raise our rates to 30 cents so everybody gets efficient, but I'm saying that price is one of those determinations and that businesses will do what it takes to keep their costs down. And so I would like to leave it up to the people that are there. I understand that there are things, that incentives that can be done. There are ways that you can provide incentives for people to do those projects. But again, many of the projects that start off as just we think you can help you out and somehow become put into the system as a permanent and you never get around them, and then sometimes they meet their purpose and sometimes they don't. So my thing is that it's really up to the private business how much that they want to try to put into it. I would be very leery to have a whole bunch of regulations that say you have to build this way or that way. We already are doing a lot of work in that area. Alaska Housing Finance has five-star rated homes, and that is a good move. It's something that there's some incentives there, and people go for it. And so I think that we're moving in that direction, and I would not want to see a whole bunch of new regulations pushed forward. Thanks.
Thank you both. I guess I should have asked you to stand up while I was getting ready for the next question. An increase of Matsuboro population to over 400 people plus is anticipated in the next 50 years. In your opinion, what is the best method for MEA to meet both the residential and commercial energy needs for that type of growth?
You meant 400,000, right?
Didn't I say 400,000?
I said 400.
I'm sorry. Well, there's a K there.
I think it is detrimental to start deciding right now what the best method is going to be. There's all kinds of regulations out there. There are lots of different options. In the U.S. today, the four majors are coal, natural gas, nuclear, and hydro. That makes 93% of all electricity produced in the United States comes from one of those four sources. My position is that each one of them has some pros and some cons. The number one thing we're looking at is, what's the bottom line? How is it going to affect the ratepayer? And what I want to see us do is to have evaluation of these programs. When we come to the time when we need something new, that we evaluate it based on those criteria. Of course, we're not going to do things that are going to totally disrupt the lifestyle of people, but we are also not going to put things in a category that says, we're never going to look at this, even if it's good for the public. So you can't make a decision today about what the best way is going to be 10 years from now. You don't know the regulatory climate, you don't know what the actual populations are, and you don't know exactly what all the issues are going to be when that comes up. We need to have a process in place, and that's a big issue, is you have a process that allows you to evaluate things as they come up, and you look through the entire situation and come to a decision based on the process that you have established. And so I want to leave that open. I'm not going to pick a favorite. I'm not going to throw out any that I'm saying are not available. I'm just saying we have a process in place, and that's one of the things we can start working on, is that process, without coming to a final decision until the time comes.
Would you like me to repeat that question?
No, thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'm willing to pick some favorites. I think that MEA has started making the right decisions that's going to get us where we need to be to meet this growth. The Eklutna Natural Gas Power Plant is a number one. It is what is going to take us through to 400,000 people in how many years, did you say? In the next 50 years. So, and then there's other projects then that MEA needs to be advocating for very heavily. We now have kind of two pretty viable gas line projects that are, you know, online in this state that we need to decide which one we're going to be advocating for, because I think either way we need to get gas to our community. We cannot rely, I don't think, long term on what's happening at Cook Inlet. We need to make sure that this gas is available across the state of Alaska so that the economies of scale keep the prices low. I also think that we need to start now on our long-term vision of alternative energy sources. We have the ability to create hydro, which we know is one of the cheapest energy sources. We have plenty of it. I think that we need to start either advocating for projects that are already on the table or start envisioning our own projects that we can help put in place. Because if we just kind of wait for things to happen and land on our table and, you know, go through a process, we may be behind the eight ball. It may be too late at that point. I know things like building a coal-fired power plant just isn't possible for this community. It would take at least 10 years to meet all of the regulations. It'd be an expensive process. There's no way that we could do that and have a viable, affordable energy source to this community. So let's put things that don't make sense to this community, that aren't healthy or viable for the long term, for families and businesses, off the table. And let's focus all of our energies on those things that will actually make sense. That's natural gas and long-term visions of hydro, perhaps even tidal, geothermal, and perhaps even wind. I'd like to see us to go in that direction. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Wow. MEA, as you've both noted, is building a natural gas plant for the short-term electrical needs of our service area. You already answered this question, so I think I'm going to skip it. What are your recommended votes for the bylaws changes in this year's MEA ballot?
Well, that's an easy one, since I know a few people, really wonderful, smart, educated, great people that I respect a whole lot that served on that committee. I recommend voting yes on all 8 of the proposals. I think they were well thought out. I think the committee did its job, and I will be supporting the bylaw changes.
Marvin?
And you were one of the committee.
I was one of those bright people on the committee. In any event, I do have a difference of opinion on that. There are some of them I do recommend very strongly. In fact, I really recommended the number 1, electronic voting. I think that's just the wave of the future, and we might as well jump into it now. I'm very much in favor of number 4, which adds another election district. Bob over here has to represent twice as many people as his other district people. And one of the things that my background in local government means that I've always believed that the government that is closest to the people serves the people best. And last year when we were up at Big Lake, we ran into some issues about some underwater lines that was very controversial. And I don't expect the people in Eagle River or down here to have those same issues. That's a different issue. And so to have another district where those people have somebody to talk to is something I think would be good. I also am very strong in favor of number 7, which requires the board to adopt their ethics committee, a code of ethics, and adopt it and adhere to it. The others, I'm not as concerned about. There are some changes that we talked about quite a bit, which was that there was a nominating committee, and in the last few years, the nominating committee has been kind of a non-functioning committee because there's really nothing for them to do, per se. They just simply put the names out, but they're not really selecting people for that. And so there was an idea to change it to an election committee to handle the whole process and not chop it up into a couple little pieces. The one that I am most concerned about is number 8. And number 8 is the one that says we're going to get rid of all financial reporting. It's not that I like reporting. It's just that the main argument at the committee meeting was that it seems like that we don't enforce it very well, and so therefore we shouldn't have it. And I'm of the opinion that I think that the people, the electorate needs to know who's putting money in, why, what they hope to get from it. And that's my position on that. So I definitely voted no on number 8 because I didn't feel like we had got to a point where the people had a good opinion of who was doing what and why. And so that was that's the one that I'm voting definitely against. The other, there's several in there that I didn't mention that are not really that big a deal to me one way or the other. Doesn't make any difference, but that's my position. Thank you.
Thank you both. MEA has been a longtime partner in the building of the Matsu Valley. Tell us about your civic efforts here, and how are you involved in building our community?
Well, I'm living here. I did spend some time working with the city of Wasilla, and I felt like that in their economic development department and also the human resources department, I spent quite a bit of time working on issues that affected not only Wasilla but the rest of the borough. I have attended borough assembly meetings trying to look at different issues. I also sometimes consult with Matsu Business Alliance, who is really interested in issues of business growth here, and I think that goes hand in hand. MEA setting the rates, getting a real good gas contract, getting the rates stabilized and know that what they are for the next 10 years or so will encourage business. And we have a lot of people commuting to Anchorage. We have people commuting to North Slope. If we can bring some of those jobs home and also help our residents that are here keep their rates low, only a couple cents difference can make a 20% difference in your cost per year, maybe $3,000 or $4,000 a year. So it's really important that we work hard on that for the families, and it's also important that we really look at how this helps business. Because if we can keep the business rates low, then they have a better retail market, and the valley is better served. I served on the bylaws committee. Also on a statewide basis, I'm a member of the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. We meet about five times a year and deal with the licenses and those kinds of things. So I have tried to stay involved in those different things and just be a part of what's going on in the state and in the community.
Would you like me to repeat the question?
No, thank you.
Okay.
I think I'm what you would consider a volunteer junkie. At least that's what my husband has called me and has, at some point in my life had limited me to five projects in a year because I was just spending all of my time doing things. And if raising four sons in this community isn't enough for building community, I have served on many, many projects, mostly focused in health and welfare, but also in other areas. Like I said, I served for many years at Links Matsu Parent Resource Center. I was the chair of the Special Education Advisory Council for several years. I've done so many volunteer activities. Anytime there's a project that we need, I served on program-based budgeting for the school district for several years when that was going on. I was the founder and coordinator of the annual Light of Hope event, which Mr. Clapperidge here was the MC for a couple years, and that was an annual event that we put on in April to provide a free kind of fun activity for families in honor of National Child Abuse Awareness and Prevention Month. We did a lot of educational services during that time. We also were the only organization or the only kind of entity to provide awards and recognition for folks in our community who give to children all year long. And we were quite honored to have Mr. Clapperidge feel that that was an important issue for him to be involved in. So I do things, I've always done things, been motivated to do things that I feel help further the health and welfare of our community and our neighbors and our children and our grandchildren. So I don't have a list of all of the things I ever did, but if you have specific questions about whether or not I was involved in it, I can let you know.
Thank you, and I'd like to thank you both for participating. Let's give them both a big hand of applause, round of applause. Bob, would you like to participate in the audience Q&A?
Sure.
That'd be fantastic. Marvin, Jamie, your mic is working better. Could you share your mic with Bob if you could come down here, please? Thank you. And now we're moving into the audience participation. I have a question. That's the mayor told me that he had the first question. So I gave him the first question. So Mayor DeVilbiss.
Thank you. I do have two other meetings that I've got to slip out to, so I appreciate giving me a chance here. And I'd like to thank you all for stepping forward. I should have been sitting up there, but it's kind of comfortable sitting back here right now. But I would like you to step back 5 years. None of you were there 5 years ago. Step back 5 years with the knowledge you have today. We've committed over $250 million for a plant without a firm fuel supply. I'd like to know how you're thinking and if your decision making would be any different in light of that.
Marvin, you want to start?
As I noted earlier, during that time that they were talking to me, 5 years ago, I guess I was here, but in the time that it was really talking about the coal plant, I was not. I was living here, kind of, this is my home base, but I had duties outside of the area, and so I got home once a month or a couple times a month, but I was not here, so I didn't get in on the real debate. I do know, just from my research, that had we done that, we would have a stable, had we built a coal plant, we would have a stable, long-term price of electricity, and that probably would be cheaper than what it's going to be. Now, if we get a real good gas contract, we may be able to match that. But that would have been something that would have created a lot less uncertainty than what we have today. Again, not talking about location, not talking about a lot of those kinds of things because I wasn't in on that debate. But I do feel like that coal is an abundant source. The one thing you got to understand is that regulations are changing so fast. I mean, the number of regulations that we had back even 10 years ago or 12 years ago are not the same as the regulations today. So I don't know where we would stand if we did another evaluation. But I know that the regulations then were such that it could have been done, and it could have been done, probably saved the ratepayers some money, and probably could have been done efficiently, and could have been something that provided stable prices for a long time into the future.
I think it was absolutely the right decision, and I think that for two reasons. The first is that the community spoke loud and clear when you proposed a coal-fired power plant in this community, and they said, no way. They didn't want it here, and you were responsive to that, and I appreciate it a lot. The second reason is that coal is not a stable fuel source, nor is it cheap once we really break down the numbers. I don't know if any of you have been reading the papers, but the coal market has been plummeting. Our only source of coal in the state of Alaska is laying off people. Coal-fired power plants are going the way of the dodo bird, to quote someone else on a Houston Community Council, in favor of natural gas plants across the country. Natural gas is the cheaper, more sustainable, more stable energy source, and we have an abundance of it. We don't have to worry about the volatile market of coal. And I thank you very much for the unanimous decision you made 5 years ago, because I think it's going to lead us exactly in the right direction.
When people think about natural gas, one of the things they forget is it's also carbon, and it only has about 50% less carbon emissions than coal itself. And every week in China, they're building a new coal-fired power plant. And in 10 years' time, they will have more on the grid on coal-fired power plants where the coal is coming from the United States and being burned there than we have in our entire United States grid. I think one of the things we need to understand is that we're in partnership with our community. The borough assembly has an ordinance, and that's one of the reasons that we have a power plant that's in Eklutna. That's one of the reasons we're building a transmission line all the way across the flats and have a controversy right now in Wasilla about how to get the power to it. I think down the road, maybe in the 50-year time frame or one, when we build the next power plant, I'd hate to do it in Hurricane Gulch. And I would hate to take off the block that we have 1,000 years of coal in Usability, the power plant that they have spent $300 million on, the clean coal power plant in Usability's Mine Mouth Generation Plant, is a legitimate source of electricity in Alaska. If you back it off for 10 years, Beluga, in theory, probably could have offered a coal-fired power plant out of Beluga. So there's a lot of things we need to think about and just be open-minded. Natural gas is not just as clean as hydro. We could have 30 years ago built Wautauna. We haven't. We have Wautauna coming online. I think hopefully it comes online. But one of the things we need to do, whether we bring the natural gas lines down to here, bring Wautauna on, we're going to have transmission line issues. There's going to be surplus. We can't use it all. We need to have an industrial use just like they had when we were Agrium and Kenai, so that we can utilize all that natural gas, or we'll be exporting it. And I just think that as a resource extraction state, where we've shut down our logging in Tongass, when we were shutting down, you know, our natural gas in petroleum reserve, all those kinds of things being taken off the table don't suit well. 93% of the state's budget comes from oil. There's less oil in that line. And we better get used to doing a whole lot less than we're doing right now if we're going to take resources off the table. So I think all of it should be on the table, and there needs to be a process where we work with the borough to sit down and say, how are we going to meet the needs long-term in the valley when we need it?
Hey, can I just add one thing since I had some time?
Okay, each of you, if you want to add one thing after Jamie does it later on, you're more than welcome to. Go ahead, Jamie.
Thank you. I appreciate what Bob said, and I just wanted to
put it out there, Fairbanks has 6 coal-fired power plants and sits right next to an extremely active coal mine, 2 million tons of coal per year. And they have one of the highest rates of energy in the state, and they have one of the worst air qualities in the state, and they are clamoring for natural gas. In my opinion, that's pretty clear evidence that coal is not the answer. Thank you.
Do I have another question from the audience? Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Mr. Yoder, I'm just curious to know if you were around in Galena when they were considering or working with the nuclear plant, and what went wrong there, or do you know anything about it?
Yeah, I was definitely in Galena then. We did look at the nuclear plant. I was probably the leader in that debate. We looked at everything. We did look at a small coal plant as well. We looked at a 5-megawatt clean coal plant before we looked at that, and we looked at biomass after we looked at that. The real issue in Galena as far as the Toshiba power plant was that we had to have a partner that was willing to actually operate and run it. And it wouldn't have been run by the municipality, it would have been run by a partner. And because the Nuclear Regulatory Commission had kind of slacked off and hadn't done anything for 30 years, it was awful hard to get them back up and running to approve a plant. And they assumed that it would be 10 to 15 years before anything could happen, and there's no partners out there that want to put up money for that long a time. The interesting thing about the nuclear power plant that we were proposing was that, I mean, I watched with all of you as Fukushima in Japan went under some very heroic things to try to keep that thing from melting down, pouring water on it. The plant that Toshiba was proposing was air-cooled, not water-cooled. We'd have never had that issue. And it's also small and has a lot of other features that were very safe, and so we did take a look at that. The way we got into it, the Department of Energy, United States Department of Energy, hired a engineering firm, a nationwide engineering firm. They hired 3 people, two from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, 1 from the University of Alaska Anchorage. And those professors came in and they did a whole study. It wasn't the city study, it was the Department of Energy study. And they looked at coal, they looked at in-stream hydro. They couldn't look at wind because Galena is a zero wind. They looked at solar, they looked at everything, even coal bed methane. And it was the conclusion of that study that nuclear would be the safest, the cleanest, and the least expensive of all the options. And so we did take a look at that, and I have stayed in contact with a lot of those people. Toshiba is not progressing as fast as some of the other small nuclear plants, and so, but that's kind of where we were in Galena.
Mr. Arvin, you said you had a question?
I do. I heard Marvin's discussion on the bylaws change regarding disclosure and that you're opposed to that language change. I would like to hear Mr. Doyle and Ms. Buhamel's comments on why you think reporting for financial disclosure should not be a rule for a seated MEA board member.
I don't need the microphone, I don't think. I just talk really loud. I actually believe you should have disclosure. And I believe that people need to know where the money's coming from and who's donating it. And I think the $500 limit is a reasonable contribution limit. However, I've been told that it's unenforceable right now, that our bylaws are unenforceable. And what we've got is kind of a situation going on where there's a lot of money getting spent and a lot of money that we don't know where it's coming from. And I think that that's a disservice to the process of the elections. I think people need to know who's running behind candidates, and I don't have a problem with listing who the donors are, and I think they should be. I think the enforceability is a question because we start setting up a situation where if people are not following the bylaws need to be followed. If they're not following them and they're not being enforced, then what happens? So I understand that the discussion that the bylaws committee went through on this, and what I basically tried to offer in support is this whole thing about a fourth small district. I also understand that the Supreme Court has said you can't limit how much people spend You know, and we see that at Pebble Mine, for example, with somebody that can spend millions. And so there's really not a limit we can place on them. And so I'm not really wanting to limit it to spending, but I do think that we should be disclosing it. But one of the reasons I'm more supportive of the small area districts like Eagle River, Palmer, and Wasilla North, which is just sitting in Matanuska and Eagle River, with those three districts, if you split up the Susitna district in four, it's just a lot less expensive to run the campaign. For example, if you're sending out information to 10,000 people and those folks that have been voting versus 50,000 people, the costs come down. And I think that that's an important consideration, and that's why I support splitting the districts, making it smaller. The area-wide districts are just more expensive to run. You know, you're going to have bigger mailers and just more costs. And so I do support breaking down the district. I haven't had anybody in my district come in and say I haven't been representing them, and it's too big to get around. You know, when I'm up at Deschka Landing and talking to people, that's not a concern. But I do think breaking it down. In terms of the drug test and some of the other changes, I tend to think that there wasn't a really good reason at the time it started, but I'm also feeling that if you get a drug test, it needs to start at the top. I mean, if the board is not willing to drug test, but we're drug testing employees, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So I really think that we need to be careful when we change our bylaws and we spend some time thinking about them. But I do think we need to know where the money's coming from. But it has to be enforced.
Jamie, did you want...
Oh, I got it. Thank you. I'm absolutely in favor of campaign disclosure for political candidates. This is not a political race. Politics should actually have nothing to do with it. This is a board of directors association election, which is not the same thing as running on a political platform or by a political party, which is a completely different animal. So I believe that the committee made a decision based on those issues, and should they come back to the table and suggest we have some kind of modified form of disclosure because that's what the member association wants, then I'd be certainly willing to look at that as well. Thank you.
I have another question here from the audience. With the 42% increase in Chugach rate beginning in April and a 0.33% MEA increase, what is being done to curtail internal MEA expenses? A hiring freeze? Any personnel reductions possible? Jamie, would you like to start that?
I think that's a question for the current board of directors as opposed to the candidates who have not been privy to the internal discussions.
Marvin, would you like to address it?
I really also would say somewhat the same thing, that I really, I think that's where we have to get in and look. And all those things come to the board with a background. I would like to see regular budget printouts and know exactly what's happening month by month. But to look at one single month and say this is what we have to fix, that's very difficult. I'm always used to seeing these reports monthly that says we spent this much of this year, this month of the budget, we had this percentage spent, and we see the trends going one way, then we figure out how to get them back in line with the budget.
Bob, do you want the microphone?
I don't believe there's a hiring freeze, and I don't believe we're laying anybody off. I think that one of the things we have struggled with is how to keep our administrative costs down. The big driver is fuel. Fuel is what's going to drive your rates. But I think we need to do, and we need to set an example, and I think it needs to be done at board level of expenses. And so the board has tried to struggle with that a little bit. We talked about cutting our Alaska Power Association dues. We reconsidered that and taking a look at that. But I think we're trying to do that at that top. But I'll give you an example right now of things that impact and possibly could impact rates is a transmission line. And if you have a transmission line that could possibly cost $9 million from Eklutna to Wasilla, or one that could cost $40 million, that's going to increase everybody's rates from Eagle River to Talkeetna, I think that's an incumbent on the board to make a decision to say we're going to find the most cost-effective model and recommend the most cost-effective model of bringing that in. Now, that's going to take a lot of hard work because not in my backyard is a real common thing that happens. As long as it's not in my backyard, you know, put that 80-foot tower in there. So I think that we have some problems, but can we afford to make a decision to say we're going to do four times the cost of a transmission line in a small area with 5,000 members and is going to be charged out to 58,000 members? I'm not sure that makes sense. So I think the board can set some examples and try and be more business oriented in making their decisions. But that's a real life example, and we're dealing with it right now. Mm-hmm. And it takes 4 votes out of 7.
Do I have another question from the audience? No hand raising. Okay, I'll ask one. Oh, Peter, I'm sorry. That was my right shoulder.
Yeah, I was fascinated by the dispute and questions that came up regarding that line and the various options that are available. And it puzzles me as to why we have our plant located outside of the Mat-Su borough. Would it have been more economical to have located it someplace other than that? And I'm not familiar with what went into the decision to put it there, but it just always seemed a bit strange to me.
Okay, Bob and Marvin are both jumping up, and Jamie's looking left and right. I think the guys want to start.
Well, clearly, there's $8 million that is being spent specifically because the plant is in Eklutna, that it would not have been spent had they been up here. Because getting across the flats is where the big expense is going to be. The other is a bunch of options of getting, I believe it's to Teeland. I went to one of the meetings, and I believe it was Teeland substation that they have to get to. And so there's several routes they're looking at, and absolutely going from here to the hospital to there is one of the big issues. And so how we do that and what route you take is going to make a lot of difference. But placing the plant in Eklutna did cost that $8 million, whereas if they'd built in the borough, there have been other ways to do it. And that happened because of an ordinance at the borough that stopped any plant, not just coal, but also the hydro plant and anything else over 50 megawatts was stopped by a borough ordinance that would have cost a lot more money. So that's what happened when they passed that ordinance. It forced the plant to be moved outside the borough limits, and that added a bunch of these costs. There could have been prime locations that probably could have saved $20 million had they been looking at the whole transmission line construct at the time. They probably could have saved up to $20 million.
You're absolutely correct. I forgot about that ordinance. I think there are good things and bad things about living in a community, and sometimes it's when you get outvoted, right, on something that you may want. And I think that part of living in this community is understanding that the community at large spoke very clearly about power plants in general, and about locating them next to neighborhoods where the property values will decline, where there's direct, maybe even health environmental impacts to them. So I think that the board made the best decision they possibly could based on not only the ordinances that the borough put in place based on what the people wanted, but also getting us to that next vision of being our own generator. So I think they made the best decision that they could, and I fully support it.
The strength of our transmission system is on the north side. And, I mean, we're bringing power in from Beluga, and you have power coming in from Douglas substation, So that's where it should have been built, and you wouldn't have had to do some of these transmission lines, as we've already talked. But what's happening now is that we've got a situation where, again, we have to partner up. We have to partner up with the borough. We have to partner up with the city of Wasilla. We have to work through the planning processes. We have to work with the DOT. We have to work with the railroads to try and bring that transmission. Given what the situation is, we have to deal with the cards we're dealt, and we're bringing that in. Bringing it down the Parks Highway makes the most sense on the original route. It's the most economical sense. But there's some people that are concerned with the view shed. I drive that Parks Highway a lot, and I have for a long time. There are power lines there. There are light towers there. There are cell towers there. There's a lot of there. It's a commercial district. My concern is if we're going to not do these transmission lines down the Parks Highway, which makes the most economic sense for MEA, and instead we're going to run it and turn it to get it into the Cottle substation after we run it down Fairview Loop or Bogart, which will add $4 or $5 million no matter which option you look at, you're impacting a lot of additional lots, more residential neighborhoods, and those are some of my concerns. So I guess my concerns is if we've got a commercial area, we've got DOT right-of-ways, let's use those things, let's do the most economic situation. But a lot of what we're doing now is kind of putting all these different things together to try and mitigate public feedback. And I think we should deal with public feedback, and I think we need to respond to it, and I think we need to respond to the city of Wasilla as well. But when it all comes down to it, there's ratepayers from Eagle River to Talkeetna that are going to have to share in this, and it needs to be done in an economical business way.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have reached our time limit, and it is now time for you to get a chance to speak one-on-one with our candidates. I appreciate all of you turning out tonight. I'm very grateful to Radio Free Palmer, the Matsu Senior Services Center, and my fellow Toastmasters, as well as the Frontiersmen. It's been an educational evening, and thank you all for coming.